All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is another Q&A episode where I will be answering your listener questions dealing with the Atlanta Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is another Q&A. I know I promised we were going to do a episode talking about Dirk Koetter's offense and getting someone from the Bucs to talk with me about Dirk Koetter and what he may be bringing to the table. But due to a last-minute scheduling conflict, we are punting that till tomorrow's episode. So we're doing the Q&A today, just sort of like, I didn't have plans. So I basically was like, I'll just do a Q&A because that was probably what I was going to wind up doing and putting up on Friday anyway. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Our first question comes from Skylar Burkhart at Burkhart Skylar on Twitter. He asks, the biggest need for the Falcons heading into the NFL draft? Well, Skylar, it depends. If they cut Ryan Schrader, I would say offensive tackle. If they cut Vic Beasley, then I would say edge rusher. If they keep both guys, then it's probably getting an interior pass rusher. James M. at JB Mull H. Were Schrader's issues this year more physical or mental? Or are you optimistic he'll bounce back? I think they were more physical because I think he was dealing with an injury. Whether he bounces back remains to be seen. I think there's one school of thought where since he played hurt this year, or at least I believed he played hurt this year, there's a reason to think that if he's healthier next season, he'll have a better season. But at the same time, given his advanced age, the fact that he'll be 31 come May, and his body isn't going to recover quite as well at that age as it would a year or two before, then he's unlikely to bounce back. This is basically what happened, in my opinion, with Roddy White from 2014 to 2015. He had a knee injury that really limited him in 2014. And then he wasn't any better in 2015 when he, quote-unquote, should have been more healthy or healthier. So we'll see. Roddy was a little older than Schrader was, and he was like 33 going into his 2015 season. So that's a little older. But, you know, you can argue that 31 for an offensive lineman, given their size and given the expectation that, or at least my belief that Schrader was dealing with some sort of lower leg injury, lower body injury, you know, and being 300 pounds probably sort of equalizes that. So it's kind of a toss-up. I think there's reasons to be optimistic. I think there's reasons to be pessimistic. So essentially, I'm neutral. Our next question comes from Tracy Edwards at Vic Tracy Ed on Twitter. He asks, can you describe how effective you expect Morgan's plan for the running game to integrate with Koetter's offense? I don't have a ton of knowledge on the dynamics and how it would work with play calls and game plans. I don't either, I guess, or at least I'm not exactly what you are asking for, other than my expectation that the Falcons will continue to be an outside zone team. I don't know what else to say other than that. I think everything we've heard from Dan Quinn this offseason suggests that one of the biggest focal points for this team this spring will be being a more quote-unquote hashtag physical team as far as running the football more next year is. And so I don't think it's as much a question of Morgan integrating his running concepts in Koetter's offense. I think it's the vice versa, which is Koetter integrating his passing concepts into what the Falcons intend to do on the ground, which is to continue to run the outside zone, which is continue to feature the outside zone scheme. You know, so to me, the question is, my bigger question is, are we going to see the rollouts and the bootlegs and those types of things that have been sort of a hallmark of our passing game due to the fact that we run so much outside zone? Or is it going to be more just straight drop back passing, which I don't think quite works as well with this running scheme as it would be? But I think there's reason to be reasonably optimistic that, you know, Koetter's been around the block. He's been in the league for a while. So I don't think the issue is going to be his ability to integrate his scheme, you know, That was a bigger question before. I don't have as big a question now as that. So I think Cutter will be fine. Okay. Our next question from Fans Since 1988 on Twitter. How many podcasts will you dedicate to Donovan Smith if Cutter brings him over to play right tackle? Now, I do know you're joking with this, so but I'll answer this question seriously. One, I don't think the Falcons are going to sign Donovan Smith because I think he's going to seek left tackle money on the open market. He was a left tackle exclusively at Penn State. He's been a left tackle exclusively in Tampa Bay. And, you know, there's every reason to believe that he will ask for left tackle money when we get to March when he hits free agency. We'll see if the Bucs are willing to pay that or somebody else is. I think there are a number of teams like the Jets, like the Texans, like the Cardinals that have a lot of cap space and have major needs on the offensive line, and probably a couple other teams I'm forgetting right now. But for those of you guys that don't know, left tackles typically make about twice as much as right tackles. A top 10 left tackle in today's market makes between about 12 and 16 million a year. A top 10 right tackle in today's market makes between about 6 and 10 million a year. So I don't expect Smith to sort of make top 10 left tackle money, I think, but he still probably should be able to get 8 to 10 million a year on the open market, which will probably make him a top 20 or so left tackle, which I think based off of his level of play over the last 4 years is a fair market value for him. And so, you know, if he gets that type of money, that still would make him one of the two or three highest paid right tackles in the league, which was what he would be if he came to Atlanta, if Atlanta was the team that paid him that type of money. So I don't really think the Falcons are going to be in the market to do that. I don't really think the Falcons are going to be in the market to pay anybody other than Grady Jarrett and Julio Jones top 10, let alone top two or three, and make them one of the top players, highest paid players at their respective positions this offseason. I think if the Falcons are going to fork up huge cash for anybody in terms of, you know, setting the market or, you know, pushing the market ahead, I think it's going to be for their homegrown guys and not anybody that they're bringing new into the team. But we'll see if I'm wrong about that prediction. And we'll see about more questions coming up. But I'm all curious if you guys got yourselves a smart speaker over the holidays like I did. I got myself a Google Home. And, you know, one of the things I like to tell my smart speaker is to play podcast Locked On Falcons. And it will go ahead and play me the latest of my favorite daily Falcons podcast. And you can do that with any Locked On podcast, your team, every day. Our next question comes from @freetrain24. Are there any players you feel the Cutter hire may directly impact the decision of the team to retain them or let them go? Not really. I don't think Cutter is going to have that much influence on personnel. You know, offensively, I still expect Matt Schaub, Logan Paulson, Ty Sambrelo to return. I think there's a possibility that Ben Garland will also return. I don't expect Tevin Coleman, Andy Levitre, or Zane Beatles to come back. And I don't think that would have changed. Those predictions would have changed regardless of who the offensive coordinator was. I think, again, Dan Quinn controls the 53-man roster, has final say over that. And I don't necessarily feel like he's going to go out of his way to accommodate Cutter in any major way this offseason, at least as far as free agents go. And I don't think Cutter's going to come in and be like, oh, no, you know, my offense is not going to work if Logan Paulson is here, or my offense is only going to work if we keep Tevin. Like, I don't think it's going to be that type of situation. So our next question comes from Matt at Matt Stars. He asks, what did we learn from Dan Quinn's play calling in 2016? Anything specific he liked to do? I thought we mixed coverages more those last seven games or so of 2016. He also had Jalen and four young guys in the back seven that he had to scheme with. I don't think they really mixed their coverages a lot. I think they just played a lot of cover one man coverage in 2016 when he took over play calling over that last month of the regular season and in the postseason. Basically, they just played a lot more man coverage. I think it simplified things for their young guys that you mentioned, who were basically through the first, you know, two thirds of that season, constantly blowing coverages in zone coverage because they didn't know what they were doing. So I think the only change was that they were a little bit more man heavy, and you can argue that was a big reason why they sort of ran out of gas in the Super Bowl, because they played almost exclusively man that entire game. And, you know, 99 snaps or whatever it was of man coverage will have you guessed. So that's really the only difference, in my opinion, from what Dan Quinn did to what Richard Smith was doing earlier in the season, and in terms of what the team has done the last couple of years, which has been a lot more zone under Marquand Manuel. Our next question comes from JB74 at JoeBear74 on Twitter. Why did the Falcons play such soft zone last year? I know it's the typical MO, but it was so much more egregious this past season. I think I've explained this before, but I think it had a lot to do with the Falcons taking a more conservative approach on defense in general, just because I think the argument you would make for why they did it was because they didn't want to give up big plays and thus get into a hole early. For longtime listeners of this podcast, my mantra is big plays equals points. And, you know, that goes for both offense and defense. If you get big plays on offense, you get points. If you give up big plays on defense, you give up points. And I think the Falcons' mantra was like, don't get into a hole early, don't give up big plays, and don't lose the game before our offense has a chance to go out there and win it. And I think that was basically their plan of attack. And, you know, with a couple obvious exceptions, it seemed to be working in the first half of the season. For the most part, if you had gotten slightly better defensive play in some of those early games, the Falcons probably would have started much better than their 4-4 record. And then the offense went into a hole and during that 5-game losing streak, and that sort of style just didn't necessarily result in winning games. But that being said, I think when you look at some of the metrics and numbers from sites like Pro Football Focus and Football Outsiders, when you look at the Falcons' coverage, you see the biggest issue was their inability to cover the middle of the field and their struggles at linebacker. Football Outsiders had the Falcons' defense in terms of covering the middle of the field ranked 13th in 2017, but that fell to 24th in 2018. Pro Football Focus, when you look at their linebacker coverage metrics, the linebackers alone combined to give up roughly 450 more receiving yards this year than they did last year. They were giving up on average 1.7 more yards per pass attempt when linebackers were targeted in coverage in 2018 than they were in 2017. So I think you can make the case, and this goes back to somewhat to what Matt was asking, but you can make the case that given the struggles of Campbell, Riley, and Olakun, particularly with all the zone that the Falcons were playing this year, that the Falcons should have been a little bit more willing to sort of simplify things like Dan Quinn did in 2016 and play a lot more man coverage to offset some of those issues. I think that's a fair point to make. I think the reason, again, if I'm defending Marquand Manuel for a second, I think the reason why he did that or he didn't do that is because they were concerned about their safety's ability to hold up in man coverage, a big part of why that 2016 man-heavy scheme worked as effectively as it did was due to the fact that Keanu Neal's ability to basically cover any tight end, and you didn't necessarily feel that confident with guys like Neesman and Richards and their ability to hold up in that situation as well. So I think that was the main reason why the Falcons did not play as much man coverage. Again, you know, it feeds into the narrative that I continue to believe that, you know, Keanu Neal is the sort of the glue guy that holds this defense together. And is the, you know, his presence in and out of the lineup is the biggest factor in how this team plays. You know, he's basically as close as you can say, if there is a Julio Jones equivalent on the defense in the terms of the guy that makes the unit go, I would argue that Keanu Neal is the closest person to that in terms of this defense. But, you know, other people may disagree with that. But for me, at least, I'm not as upset with the, you know, egregious soft zone, as you put it, Joe, as so many others. I've had many people say to me that the number one reason why the defense struggled this year is because of Marquand Manuel's insistence on playing the soft zone. I don't think that's the number one reason for the defensive downfall this year. I happen to think the defensive downfall had more to do with the fact of the subpar play of the front seven. We know that this pass rush was one of the worst in the league based off of, you know, metrics like pressure rate. We know that their linebackers core, according to the stats I just quoted to you, were among the worst coverage units in the league this year. For me, those are the areas that I'm more focused on. You know, as far as the linebacker position goes, I don't necessarily know if it's a priority to upgrade this offseason. Certainly, I wouldn't be against the team upgrading that spot. But I do think the Falcons, at least on paper, can afford to punt at the linebacker position this year and say that, oh, you know, we have more pressing issues on the defensive line. If and when we cut Robert Alford, we're going to need to address our cornerback depth more so than linebacker. And you can make the case that with Deion Jones playing healthy, having a full season next year, seeing what growth Olakun shows in year two, hoping that Devondre Campbell can bounce back after a subpar season in the contract year, and maybe, you know, having a hope and a prayer that Duke Riley will suddenly turn into a competent role player in his third year that he wasn't in his second year. I think, again, you can justify punting at that position and hoping to do, you know, better. But what I will say is, and I said this, I think, shortly after the Ravens game, it would not shock me whatsoever if the Falcons' number one pick in 2020, the draft after this upcoming one, that their number one pick is a linebacker next year. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But, yeah, we'll see. We got more questions to come on today's episode. But before we get there, I do want to plug the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast with host Brad Rowland. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. All right, our last question comes from Boca Junior number 3 at Young FIFA on Twitter. He asks, how do you feel about Brian Baldinger saying Michael Thomas is an all-around better receiver than Mr. Jet Jones? I don't agree with it, but frankly, I don't really care. You know, for me, Thomas is in my top 7 of the quote-unquote elite number one wide receivers, the guys that truly, truly affect coverages. I think there's 7 of those guys. And going into the year, I had them ranked Julio 1, Antonio Brown 2, A.J. Green 3, Beckham 4, Evans 5, Thomas 6, and Hopkins 7. Now, after 2018, I'd probably adjust those rankings a little, probably move Hopkins up a little bit, put him maybe at 5, maybe put Evans at 6 or 7, and probably shuffle Thomas either 6 or 7 or whatever. But I haven't updated those, but that's just sort of where I'm leaning towards right now. So I disagree with it, but like generally speaking, I don't get butthurt about rankings and whatnot when I see someone saying Julio Jones is not the best wide receiver on the planet, which I think he is, but I don't go like, the audacity, how could somebody, and I don't get mad online or anything like that. Generally speaking, when I see a ranking that I don't agree with, I go in my head, I'm like, I don't really agree with that anyway. And I just keep scrolling, or I click on a new link and read something else on the internet, as opposed to be like, I'm going to let this person know how much I disagree with him on Twitter or in on a message board or whatever the case may be. So that's not me. If other people want to sit here and fight Saints fans about who's better, Michael Thomas or Julio Jones, that's your time, that's your energy. You know, I don't spend a lot of time worrying about other people's rankings and whatnot and feeling slighted whenever I see some random person. And that's essentially what it is. Brian Baldinger's a great analyst. You know, or I won't say great, but he is one of the better analysts out there. But that doesn't mean that every opinion he says is the one that I will agree with. So it is what it is, man. You know, that's it. There you go, guys. Of course, as I'm recording, there's even more questions sent in. Let's see. We've got a bunch from Mave2124 at New Jersey Falcons Ronan. He says, are there any limits to the amount of June 1 cut designations per team? I believe it's 2. His next question is, are there any limits to the amount of guys you can restructure contracts of and on the team? I don't think so. I think the only limitation is there's a time table in terms of how long it is between your last restructure. I know of the old CBA, it used to be 12 months, but I think they changed that with the new CBA, and I don't know what it is right now. His next question is, teams can't cut anybody until after the Super Bowl, correct? Yeah, I believe it's the week after the Super Bowl or the week after the Super Bowl is when teams can cut. I remember 2 years ago, whenever we cut Willie Moe, it was like the first time you could cut guys, like that week. And that was like the first or second week of February. So that's usually the earliest time. And his last question is, the player most poised for a leap in production going into 2019 season and why? That's a tough one. I got to sit there and think about that one. Leap in production. Devontae Freeman? Is that a cheat? Let's see. Let's eliminate anybody that was missed significant time in 2018 due to injury. So the immediate people that pop into my head are Ito Smith, Calvin Ridley, you know, it's hard to say offensive linemen have a jump in production. Tack would be on that list. Boom, boom, boom. Sanat. Who else? Linebacker position. Olakun would be on that list. I'm just naming off the guys that would be on the short list. And so I'm narrowing it down to like six or so guys and then picking one of those. So what did we have? Like five. Cornerback. Oliver, obviously. So, yeah, so I guess one of those six. So between Ito, Ridley, Oliver, Sanat, Tack, am I missing one? And Olakun, most poised for a leap in production. I mean, it seems like everything is gearing up for Oliver to be that guy. So I'll just, without spending too much time thinking about it, I'll pick Oliver. Tack would also be on that list for me personally. I'm not on the Isaiah Oliver hype train quite yet. I'll wait until we get till training camp at least wait till we get to, you know, OTAs and mini camps and hear what all the people going to those practices are saying about Oliver before I get on the Oliver hype train quite yet. But in terms of just looking at what a guy did this past season and my expectations, I'll probably pick Tack because I sort of always thought 2019 would be Tack's breakout year as opposed to 2018, like so many people thought going into this season. And that was one of the reasons why I was a lot more skeptical of than most people were as far as this Falcons pass rush making a significant leap forward. So, I guess Oliver or Tack would be my two answers. Okay. Well, there you have it, guys. I appreciate everybody for sending in their questions last minute. I appreciate Andy for sending in his questions as I was recording this episode, so we couldn't leave those off at the end. For those of you guys that are relatively new to the show and don't know how to submit your questions, it's very simple. Social media is the place to be. If you're on Twitter, just go ahead and send it to the show's Twitter handle, which is Locked On Falcons. If you're on Facebook, send it to the show's Facebook page, which is Locked On Falcons. Make sure you like us while you're there. If you're not a fan of social media, as some of you humans are out there, for some reason you have not fallen into this deep, deep, dark abyss that is social media, you can still submit your questions via email at lockedonfalcons@mail.com, or you can go to falcfans.com where the podcast is posted daily and leave a comment. So again, once again, tomorrow we will be back with an episode talking about Dirk Koetter and sort of what he did in Tampa Bay to sort of update our perspective in a post-2014 way. And, Monday we'll probably be back with another mailbag episode. So if you have any additional questions that you did not get into today or tonight or yesterday or whenever you're listening to this episode, you can still submit them over the weekend and I can get to them on Monday. And then next week we should be starting up the roster review and going position by position and really looking at how everybody played in 2018 And that should carry us over for a couple of weeks into mid-February. And around that time, then we can start gearing up for free agency and the combine and that sort of thing. So there you have what the upcoming plans are. So, all right, guys, until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.